From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Outer Mission.
I live in the Nastro.
I live in the Mistro.
La Playa.
Haight-Ashbury.
I'm in the sunny but filthy Mission.
Coming up, we hear what it's like to live with HIV in prison.
They don't want you living in a cell with them. They're worried about showering with you. They're worried about a lot of things, you know, and it's all based on ignorance and fear.
Then we talk with a leading public health researcher about the current state of HIV/AIDS in San Francisco.
You can both provide treatment for somebody who's infected and provide prevention for someone who's uninfected. And we think that in combination, we really can eliminate the epidemic.
And we hear a personal story about an HIV patient who hoped to raft the Grand Canyon.
Doctor's office called me at home to tell me they didn't think I should go on this trip.
Life with HIV, today on Cross Currents. Today, more than 1.2 million Americans live with HIV. If you have access to the right medication, modern drugs can turn the once terminal disease into a manageable chronic disease. But what if you are HIV positive and you are in prison? It's a question we put to our reporters at San Quentin.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
Bringing you hidden stories from life inside.
In order to make something grow, you gotta own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop.
As of 2010, there were 20,000 federal and state prisoners living with HIV. They are five times more likely to have the disease than people who are not incarcerated. As recently as 2013, some states still segregated prisoners based on HIV status.
You can live with the virus. I've lived with it for 24 years. It wasn't a death penalty without an appeal.
That's the voice of an inmate in San Quentin. He didn't want to use his name, so we'll call him Adam.
I am 52 years old. I was sentenced to 27 years to life, and I've been locked up 33 years.
From the San Quentin Prison Report, reporter Lewis A. Scott brings us the story of an inmate living with HIV. And a note to our listeners, San Quentin reporters are allowed only to record in certain places, so you might hear the building's clanking pipes in the background.
I contracted the virus on a family visit with my wife. She didn't know she had the virus.
It was after a conjugal visit with his wife in 1989 when he contracted the virus.
She passed away in 2004. So we, you know, struggled together until she actually passed. She died of emphysema, not HIV. But it was difficult because she felt guilty infecting me and not knowing. And it was just one of those things. Then having to tell our children that we had it, you know, it was a difficult period.
When I ask Adam how his wife contracted the virus, he says,
it didn't matter, just like it doesn't matter now. All I know is that she got it. She didn't intentionally give it to me. We had it, we have it, and that was it. It didn't matter about how she caught it.
Not only was Adam hit hard with the news that he was HIV positive, getting this news while serving a life sentence hit him even harder.
I felt like I had been served a death penalty without an appeal. I was in ADSEG when I was tested positive.
ADSEG is short for administrative segregation, which is also known as solitary confinement.
The officers came to get me with masks on, shields, and it was like 12 officers that came and got me. And it was one of the most humiliating things I've ever had in my life.
Back in the late 80s and early 90s, having HIV was enough to segregate an individual, where one is confined to a cell for 23 hours a day and given 1 hour of rec time outside of the cell.
Well, in the beginning, we were all segregated. Anybody with HIV was automatically segregated and placed in a housing unit. People still look at people that have the virus as leapers, you know. They don't want you living in a cell with them. They're worried about showering with you. They're worried about a lot of things, you know, and it's all based on ignorance and fear. You know, if I'm not shooting dope with anybody, I'm not having sex with anybody, they have a zero possibility of contracting the virus from me.
In terms of gaining support through support groups, Adam has been reluctant to go because of the stigma of having HIV in prison. Confidentiality is paramount. However, there's still a rumor mill that circulates throughout prisons among the inmate population.
The people that work in the clinic have identified who goes to see what doctors, and then they'll go out and tell people on the yard. So people are really afraid to go to the self-help groups, not necessarily self-help groups, but the support groups, because fear of being stigmatized or labeled of having HIV.
Living with HIV is difficult. And for those incarcerated, it adds an extra layer of challenges. He says that he overcomes the stigma of having HIV in prison by sharing his condition with medical personnel only and doing all that he can to live a healthy quality of life while mentoring other inmates that have tested positive for HIV. From San Quentin Prison Report, this is Lewis A. Scott.
The San Quentin Prison Report is a partnership between KALW and the prison that helps train inmates to be journalists. And today is A Day with HIV, a one-day anti-stigma campaign by Positively Aware, a journal for people living with HIV/AIDS. The campaign encourages people with the disease to post photos of themselves online. To take part, find more information at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. HIV was first recognized as an illness by the U.S. government in 1981. Locally, the epidemic is not over. San Francisco is indelibly marked by the epidemic, which reached its height in the 80s and 90s. But what's going on now? Dr. Susan Buchbinder is director of Bridge HIV, a Department of Public Health HIV Prevention Research Program. She's also on the steering committee of Getting to Zero San Francisco, an initiative that aims to reduce deaths, new infections, and stigma. She sat down with KALW's Jen Sheehan.
So nationally, new HIV infections have held steady at about 50,000 per year for the last decade. Is HIV/AIDS still an epidemic?
It is still an epidemic. Globally, there's still about 2 million new infections per year. And while the numbers have been coming down globally, we still have HIV still has a massive impact on people's well-being, on the economies of multiple countries, and on the duration of people's normal lifespans. Uh-huh. But what's really changed in the last 10 years has been getting access to treatment for people globally. And that's really increased dramatically. We've also learned that if you get treated early and you get treated so that your virus is fully suppressed in the blood, that you're substantially less likely to transmit HIV to a sex partner or an injection drug partner. So
not only does it help them avoid the health pitfalls, but actually can stop or almost stop the transmission.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And then we have now the other side of the equation, which is we know that pre-exposure prophylaxis or taking a daily pill can prevent someone from becoming HIV infected. So now we have this opportunity for synergy where you can both provide treatment for somebody who's infected and provide prevention for someone who's uninfected. And we think that in combination, we really can eliminate the epidemic. We can bring down new infections to a very low level and maintain the health of people who are infected and keep people who are not infected from becoming infected.
PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, is a relatively new tool in the fight against HIV infection. And I know that last year, the SF Board of Supervisors approved $350,000 to aid in access to PrEP for San Francisco residents. How is that going? How's that program going?
The city has been remarkably supportive of all of our efforts in Getting to Zero. And Getting to Zero is a consortium of groups from all over the city that are working towards this goal of zero new HIV infections, zero HIV deaths, and zero HIV stigma.
And those are goals set by the UN program on HIV/AIDS?
That's right. So UNAIDS does also have a Getting to Zero program. And we believe that in San Francisco, we're poised to become the first municipal entity to actually achieve that goal of zero. Because we have so many different groups working, we have so many activists in the community who have been working so hard for so many years, we have these tools, we have the political will, so we believe that in combination we can get to zero.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that we know that even if we can completely treat HIV, it can still be causing some low level of inflammation. And So we want to suppress that fully as we can. But the best way to do that is not to get infected at all. So while we are working as hard as we can to treat people who are HIV infected and hopefully ultimately cure them, we also want to have this path to prevent new infections through hopefully a vaccine in the future, but right now through pre-exposure prophylaxis. And people won't need that prevention all through their lives. We can think about it as kind of like contraception for women, that there are periods of time when they need to prevent pregnancy and when they may be at risk for pregnancy. And then there are other times when that's not an issue for them. And similarly, there are periods of time when people may be at higher risk, particularly as
they're like between relationships or in there in a period where they're just having a lot of partners, for example.
Exactly. They're vulnerable for one reason or another. It may be that they're young. It may be that they're between relationships. It may be that they have, that they're using some substances. And while they're dealing with the substance use issue, you still want to help protect them from becoming HIV infected. So we really do talk about PrEP as being used during these seasons of risk and not as a lifetime preventive treatment.
That's Dr. Susan Buchbinder, the director of Bridge HIV at the San Francisco Department of Public Health. That brings me to this question, which is, who is affected by HIV then? In San Francisco, is it still mainly men who have sex with men? Who else is affected?
So it is, we do have a different epidemic than we see, for instance, on the East Coast, in that our epidemic is very largely in men who have sex with men. We're one of the few places that actually measures HIV infection in the transgender population. And although it's a smaller number of individuals, proportionate to the size of that population, it's a very, very heavily impacted population. We're fortunate in that from very early on in the epidemic, we had syringe exchange programs and harm reduction programs for people who inject drugs. So we've never had the kind of epidemic in people who inject drugs that was seen on the East Coast or that was recently seen with a breakthrough cluster of infections in Indiana, where there was a very large cluster of new infections spread through injection drug use. But we see the same kinds of disparities that are seen across the nation in terms of race, ethnicity. We have higher rates of HIV infection in Black or African American men who have sex with men than in white men who have sex with men. The numbers are highest in the white population because we have a much larger white population in San Francisco, but the rate per 100,000 is much more intense in the African American community. The good news is that rates are coming down in both groups. And the good news is that we've seen a pretty dramatic decline in new infections or new diagnoses in women in San Francisco.
What about in young people, in the group of people, let's say under 25, what are you seeing in the infection rate there?
So we do see a relatively high infection rate in people who are younger, in the 15 to 25 year old age range. 15 to 29 is really the way that we're looking at it. And they're accounting for now the greatest proportion of new infections. So it is a real issue and a real problem. And as I said, people who are younger may be more vulnerable to HIV. It may be for biological reasons, but it's certainly also for social reasons. They may have less power in relationships. They may not yet have been able to negotiate safer sex practices. They may be experimenting in different ways. And so we really think that we need to address HIV prevention among younger people. It's also true that the younger people are the ones who are least likely to remain in care. And that's a group that we really need to keep in care. What's great is that we now have more systems for health insurance for everyone, including younger people may be able to be maintained on their parents' health insurance. But sometimes that creates its own set of issues if a person doesn't want their parent to know that they're getting these kinds of health services. So again, we need to work on all of that, and that ties right back into stigma.
That's Dr. Susan Buchbinder, director of Bridge HIV, a Department of Public Health HIV Prevention Research Program. She spoke with KALW's Jen Chien. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Every person with HIV has a unique relationship with the disease. We hear from one of them in this next piece from StoryCorps, in partnership with our project, The Spiritual Edge, stories at the intersection of innovation and belief.
I'm a Muslim.
I am a Jewish.
I have no religion.
I'm Christian.
Reformed Judaism.
I'm Catholic.
Muslim. Not religious.
Buddhist.
Southern Baptist.
Hindu. Atheist.
Christian.
Agnostic.
Catholic.
Frank Hatch lived with HIV for more than 20 years, only to be hit by cancer in 2010. For comfort and guidance, he turned to his Buddhism practice, and encouraged by his nephew, he decided to do something he never thought he could. In this piece, the two of them discuss Frank's determination to live life to the fullest.
You know, when cancer hit, it was a really low blow. I mean, here I survived HIV long enough only to die from cancer, which was missed.
Well, you're not dead yet.
I'm not dead yet, but it's hard because it's in my face every day. So I think, you know, Buddhism just sort of put to words what I've always sort of inherently known, that the key to being happy is to love the best you can. And the rest of it sort of just takes care of itself. This whole process of being sick for so long, I mean, if I had given up, I wouldn't have been on the Grand Canyon with you last summer. I remember it was January, I think, of 2012. You said to me, "Hey, Uncle Frank, do you want to go on the Grand Canyon?" And I said, "Oh, there's no way I could do that, Jason." I said, "I just have too many medications and I have no idea how sick I'll be." And then finally, when it came within weeks to go, you talked me into it. And I was very nervous about it because I didn't know what was going to happen out there. It was 16 days out in very deep wilderness.
The roughest of conditions possible.
Yeah, over 110 degrees every day. And doctor's office called me at home to tell me they didn't think I should go on this trip. I had said to you, I said, would you have a problem if I actually did die out there in the canyon and you have to deal with a dead body? And you said, what? No, we'll just leave you there. We'll just tie you to the front of the boat. And it couldn't have been better. I mean, if I were to imagine what it would be like to die and the sensation that I would want to have, it would be that feeling that we had so often in there, that indescribable sense of being so small, so insignificant, yet completely connected to it.
I think you came back stronger and it gave you a new lease on your abilities, because I don't think you expected to be able to do it. And once you did it, and with the gusto, I mean, this hitting those rapids, those waves that you took on, hooting and hollering, this is what life is about. I think you found it to its core when pushed to your weakest and most scary point in life. You faced it and said, "Bring it on, I'm going to take you."
My regular doctor, I think she goes, "I can't even believe you're on your feet." She goes, "Anybody else would have like taken to bed years ago." And he goes, "And you're like still going." And I'm like, "Well, you know, I'm going to go until I can't go anymore, I guess." And that's all. And I love you very much.
I love you too. Thank you for bringing me in on this. Are we going to get to go rafting this weekend now?
Do you want to? We're definitely going to go. We're rafting.
That was Frank Hatch and his nephew, Jason Friend. The piece was produced by Ryan Miller for KALW's project, The Spiritual Edge, in partnership with StoryCorps Legacy, which collects the stories of those living with serious illness. It was recorded at the Zen Hospice Project in San Francisco. Find more at KALW.org. Click Spiritual Edge. Before we leave you today, we wanted to share a short piece from Tom DeCaney. He's the Director of Cultural Affairs for the San Francisco Arts Commission. Let's hear what he had to say in this piece from our series, My Mixtape.
My name is Tom DeCaney, and I live in San Francisco, California. And my song is Beam Me Up by Midnight Magic. And I think what I love about the song right now is that there's this band that has garnered really great energy within the queer community and has such a good party vibe. And I've yet to get to see it live, but I hear it's as inspiring live as I find it recorded. It's one of those songs that can kind of change the energy in a room, and I think has a really great way to inspire a dance party. There's something really valuable about music that inspires you to dance. That's a song that's been getting me up to dance lately.
Tom DeCaney, thanks for sharing your mixtape with us. And if you'd like to share your favorite music, we'd love to hear about it. Email us at news@klw.org or call us and leave a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Emma Nobel, Colin Peden, Seth Samuel, Lizak Shalit, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Ted Muldoon. The line producer is Jeremy Dalmas. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll learn how a law put in place to help patients get mental health care is still leaving many untreated and frustrated.
It does something to your spirit to realize that your hands are tied. You are completely unable to do the work that you are not only trained to do, but dedicated to doing.
Mental health care in California. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. This music is by a trio of guys from San Francisco who call themselves Sister Chief. They play the Hotel Utah Friday night. Doors open at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.